Hello, humans of triathlon, and welcome back or welcome to the Hot Podcast, where we bring you the ordinary but extraordinary world of triathlon, one human, one story at a time, with the aim to inspire and to celebrate this life-changing sport and its humans through real, authentic, raw, and enjoyable conversations with triathletes from around the globe and from all walks of life. I'm Swapnil Chauhan here with my co-host Charles Hunk and Radmom Robin, along with another amazing guest.
All right, guys. So when victims of abuse, humans instinctively look for a sense of justice by placing some form of penalty or price to pay on the abuser's side. But many times, depending on context and circumstances, this can be difficult. And most of the times, we never really internally feel the damages have been fully paid for. Today's guest is an example of someone who looked instead to get justice from within, to get a sense of inner peace that allowed her to come stronger than ever. In her own words, triathlon didn't just save me. It ensured that the bond that allowed my abuser to control me was broken once and for all. Also, did anyone say Patagon Man? Yeah, I think I heard that. And so will you if you stick around for the next hour while we talk to this hardcore human of triathlon whose 90% of Instagram posts are lessons of how to do a proper yoga pose. Ladies and gents, please welcome Ashley Zaccaro.
Welcome, Ashley.
Hi.
Welcome, Ashley.
Hi.
We are glad to have you on. So, yeah, how have you been?
Very good.
You just did the came back. Man. Yep. How was it? Like, it was your first Ironman, wasn't it?
Yes, my first full distance.
And you chose to do an extreme try. That's crazy.
That's a pretty tough first one.
It is.
Yeah. I guess I wouldn't really know if it's worse, but I believe you.
So yeah, we'll get back to that soon. Want to hear more about that. But so to like get things going, we start off with this question, which is, let's say you were to write a book about your life and you could start that book from any point of your life, which point in time would you like to begin the book with and why?
So I've been thinking about it. I feel like an essential part of my story is that my upbringing was very, very, very privileged. So somewhere in the very beginning, growing up, I was very blessed, and theoretically I had everything that I could want, but I struggled with depression for a large portion of my life, and I think that's sort of where my story begins.
Okay. So when you say very privileged, what, just expand on that a little bit more.
My parents got divorced when I was, or they started to get divorced when I was 8, but up until then we were sort of like the quintessential modern American family. My dad, he started a business. It was very successful. So we lived in a very safe neighborhood where we didn't, you know, we left our car keys in the car with the doors unlocked kind of thing. Yeah. In one square mile town with, you know, everyone knows everyone, and it's just very, very safe and never wanting for anything, that kind of thing.
Right.
Was your depression at all linked to your parents' divorce, or did it start at some other time?
It started around there. It's hard to really say, you know, what would have happened not for that, but I think that's sort of what triggered it. And then just sort of never went away.
It must have been hard as a teenager.
Yeah, it started even before that. I was more like 9, and that was also middle school and puberty and a very tough age, I think, for anyone. And it was hard, you know, being in a theoretically a really admirable family where, you know, kind of there's that stigma about people who are well off and having mental illness, like as if it's just about gratitude or something like that. So you sort of feel like you have all this stuff. Yeah.
So did you kind of like, obviously you were really young, so were you able to talk to anyone about it? Did you like know what was going on, or do you just have this feeling and you weren't sure what it was?
I actually, I I didn't know it was happening, but I remember the moment where it clicked, and it was Father's Day some year, and we were at Hershey Park with my dad and his girlfriend and her daughter, and my sister was there. And you know, it's a theme park, there's rides, there's a lot to do, and I used to love roller coasters. And I remember I just wanted to sit on the bench, and I told my dad, I'm just gonna sit here, you guys go do whatever. And he was like, it's because you're depressed. And I was like, oh yeah, that's why. But up until, like, it just didn't occur to me. I think I was so young, I didn't even realize like anything had changed or anything was wrong until he said it. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, that's, it isn't normal how I feel.
Did you have any sports at that time in your life that you could kind of get, I don't know, work things out with?
Not at all. And that's, you know, regretful in hindsight. Yeah, I really didn't do anything for it for a long time. And that's kind of the place that I was in when obviously the abuse happened. So I didn't have any outlet, and I relied a lot on my friends, and the person who abused me was my best friend at the time. So that sort of was a vulnerability that he exploited, was that I did rely a lot on my friendships to kind of keep me happy, or so I thought.
I mean, that must have been kind of, you could say, scary, because, you know, a friend who you said your best friend who did this, then you had to rely on other friends. So did you have any like issues with trust or anything like that?
Yeah, very much so. And that's something I really struggle with still. I mean, the nature of it was very confusing, and it really took me 5 years to even understand what had happened, because he got to know me and understand me, and knew that I had these weaknesses and, you know, my happiness and my self-confidence. And he kind of built this relationship with me where I relied on him for a lot of things, and I trusted him so deeply. And when he decided to start abusing me, like I just couldn't fathom that he was doing that. So I didn't even see it for a really long time. And I actually remained friends with him for a long time, which is, might sound crazy, but is not all that uncommon, I've learned. But until really a few years ago, I didn't even understand that he was wrong.
So how did you come to that understanding? Was there an event or sort of a slow dawning, or?
It was a little bit of both. After high school, which had happened in high school, I really became very isolated for 2 years. I didn't really talk to anybody. And I was just suffering in all sorts of ways. And then eventually I ended up moving to New York City, where I live now, and ended up dating my boyfriend, who, when I, you know, between the abuse with my abuser and my boyfriend, I didn't really have friends, let alone, I certainly didn't have any physical contact with anybody. And when I started dating my boyfriend, it became very apparent to me that I was not normal, and that I had a lot of issues that seemed to stem from what had happened. So it was kind of a slow learning process with my boyfriend, just kind of learning how to have a relationship and to, you know, realize the extent of the damage that was done. So it was slowly kind of discovering that there were all these residual consequences of what had happened, and then learning to assign the blame to, you know, my abuser. Once I was kind of more aware of it and able to kind of call it abuse, I confronted him, and that led me to fully understanding that what he had done was completely intentional, that it was not some mistake that my friend made, which was sort of the story I was telling myself at that point. Mm-hmm. It made me realize that he was, you know, he was an abuser. It was real. Like, it wasn't just something in my head. It wasn't something that I had done. It was him. It was a little bit of both. It was a slow but also sudden realization.
And so where did it go from there?
So after I had realized that it was all real, I reported him to the police for rape, and that led to a small investigation where my abuser didn't make a statement, and then the prosecutors did not pursue the case. And that's where that's where triathlon came into my life.
It must have been really sort of disheartening to feel like it wasn't being.
It's a really, I don't know how to explain the feeling. Like, there was the process of reporting was so stressful, and I developed this like anxiety. I have had anxiety, like I said, anxiety, depression for a large portion of my life, but the anxiety that I had while I was reporting was unlike anything I had ever experienced before. It was very physical. Like, my stomach was upset all the time. And whenever I got an email, I would literally jump. So there was, at the time that I was told it wasn't going to go forward, there was a moment of relief where I was like, thank God, because I can't take it anymore. Like, if this were to go forward, it would be years before anything happened, if anything happened. But that relief lasted for a very short time before I realized the implications of it, that it meant that he would never be tried. He would never. Yeah. Yeah.
So after that, did you know that you had to like deal with it yourself within yourself? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I became aware that I was not okay with it, and that I had to figure out a way to be okay with it anyway, because I had no control over that at that point. And I think really it's the way that triathlon came into my life is miraculous to me, because I don't know how I would have figured out a way to deal with it otherwise, if it didn't fall into my lap. Because 3 days after I found out that they weren't going to prosecute him, I got an email from a charity that I donate to, Farm Sanctuary, that joined our New York City triathlon team. And I was like, I applied instantly. I was like, this is what I'm doing.
So why do you think it spoke to you so like strongly?
I was a runner already, and I had technically done a triathlon before with my running partner. We did a super sprint women's only triathlon in, I think it was 2014, without really training. Like, I doggy paddled and we borrowed bikes from someone. And I enjoyed it a lot, and I thought someday I would like to get into it. And I had actually looked at the New York City triathlon, but I didn't really think I could do it because it was so long. And
from where you're standing today, that probably seems kind of amusing.
It is amusing, but it was also last year, so it's kind of just insane how it's happened.
Yeah, wow. Progress really quick. I mean, even that first race, I think you won, you finished, you got on the podium in the age group, right?
Yeah, I came in third in my age group.
And you qualify for nationals, and you know, you've progressed really, really quickly since then.
Yeah, it's all worked out extremely well.
So what is your favorite kind of part of the triathlon experience? What really makes it important for you?
I think that a huge part of it is that it's not, unlike running, you really need to train, where like it becomes a lifestyle. It's not just a, you know, a one-off. And I love the training. I guess you have to, but I really enjoy like waking up and being like, what am I going to do today? And there's so many options and I love them all. And and then during the race, I mean, I make friends at every single race that I do. And I just, the camaraderie and in a triathlon is just ridiculous. Like, that everyone there has sort of a similar, slightly insane mindset. And
take us back to that first triathlon. So you trained with the charity group. Did you guys all train together?
We did.
Or was it just kind of a,
we did some training
on your own thing?
Yeah, it was, we have a Facebook group where there was like emotional support. And a lot of those, you know, we all did the team this year as well. So full rides together and some open water swimming together, but mostly the training was alone. But I just remember waiting in line for the swim start. And I have a fear of the water, which is pretty much completely gone now at this point. But the jump from like the barge into the Hudson River is probably 2 feet. And I was standing there and literally telling my boyfriend and my mom that I hated myself for signing up for this. Like, I was so scared to jump like 1 foot down into like a very controlled body of water.
Was it super cold?
No, not even. It's pretty warm in there, and it's probably the easiest swim, at least for an Olympic distance, and I'd say maybe the world.
So after that first one, did you just like, how was the progression? Did you know that you want to do another one immediately, or what was that like?
I signed up for the New York City Triathlon for the next year at the award ceremony.
So you were bit.
I was bit.
By the bug.
So what was it about it that made you addicted to it?
I don't really know. It just was amazing. I think as far as what I was conscious of, one of the things that made that race so much fun to me was during the bike leg of the race, there was this girl, her name is Kelly, who obviously we could see our age group on our legs. And she and I, for the whole 25 miles, were passing each other back and forth every couple minutes. And it got to the point that we would just laugh and say hi every time we passed. And it helped both of us, I think, do better. She ended up coming in second. She and I now are still connected. We did Escape from Alcatraz together this year, but just that was like the camaraderie that I love so much, that I'm sure, you know, we all love so much, hit really, really hard because I made a friend. Like, I didn't expect that. It was just so lovely. Like, people are so just having fun and laughing and talking, and you're also working really hard. I just loved it. But I think also a lot of it was a big part of that time in my life where I was coping with sort of leaving the abuse and the lack of justice in the past, and really the lack of answers in the past. It was something that was really hard for me to deal with. I had kind of a deep sense of needing to understand how this person who I cared for and who I thought cared for me could actually hurt me in such an intentional and messed up way. And I think also because he was my friend and we had stayed connected, there was a big part of me that wanted the answers from him. And something that I've learned about abusive relationships since then is that, you know, a lot of times you hear people go back to their abusers or they don't leave. And why is that? And there's a lot of stigma about it. Like, why, if somebody's hurting you, why would you not leave? And that's something that I could relate to. It's something that even after I reported him, I texted him begging him to give me answers at one point, which seems insane because I should know better than to go to him for answers. But what I've learned is that abusive relationships do have a physiological effect on your brain and your hormones that does create a very similar, or if not an actual, addiction to that person, to the abuse. And one of the main hormones that's affected in an abusive relationship is adrenaline. And because of that, you sort of become an adrenaline junkie being in an abusive relationship. You get addicted to the adrenaline and then the subsequent dopamine that gets released in the moments of highs where this person who abuses you is being nice to you and making you feel good. And then when they abuse you, you want it, you crave them, and that chaos has a really damaging effect on your hormones, specifically your adrenaline, your norepinephrine, and your dopamine. So one of the ways that you can actually sort of break that cycle is to replace the addiction with a healthier thing, which also releases adrenaline. Essentially, you kind of can take advantage of the adrenaline junkie that has been created in you by an abuser to find a habit that releases adrenaline, which I knew none of this when I started triathlon, but it happened to work out.
Jumping off a barge into a river kind of stretch that
does the trick.
Yes. Wrote in the email you sent us your story. I was wondering, like, you mentioned that you had this addictive type of bond between him and you, and yeah, you, that whatever you just said makes complete sense now.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, walk us through, so was there like a particular point where you felt like that addictive bond had been broken? Sort of walk us through how your thoughts and maybe your feelings kind of changed or like evolved from before you started triathlon till that moment or time when you felt that the bond was broken?
So I, in some ways, just like the discovery of the abuse, it was slow and quick at the same time. Once I started really training for the triathlon, I actually think it is the swimming, which was the thing that scared me the most, that had the biggest impact on me. I just realized that I didn't need him. I didn't need his excuses or his answers or anything like that, and that it wasn't helpful to me, which was something that I logically knew much longer, but I couldn't get myself to let go of that. Like I was, I think, you know, addicted to the desire for an explanation. And once I became immersed in the training, you know, I started training in January and I never texted him again after January. And I think that speaks volumes. But even now, I mean, it's a process, but I think that the biggest thing that left me vulnerable to him ever taking advantage of me in any way again was that I did want him to explain it. And that's the thing that I would never, I can't ever go back there. There's no part of me that is worried I would, because not only did triathlon give me, I mean, a new source of adrenaline and made me see that it wasn't healthy, but it also really built my self-worth up in a way that nothing else ever did. And it gave me so much to look forward to and realize like there is this long future ahead of me that doesn't have him in it. And that's a great thing. But there wasn't really a moment where I realized like he has no power over me anymore. It's just looking back, I realized that he doesn't. And that took a long time.
So independent of this, you know, abusive relationship, has your depression been affected by your training and your racing?
Absolutely. I still struggle with depression. And I think that to some extent, I always will. And it's sort of just something I accept. And I'm thriving anyway, if that makes sense. I'm doing a lot. And I'm also happy. But actually, really, running was the thing that made the biggest difference in my depression. I started running, I mean, ironically, the year after the abuse happened. I was living with a friend and his mom was a runner. And she just kind of asked me like, hey, do you want to do this marathon with me? And I was not an athlete at all. And I was just, for some reason that I could never explain why, but I was like, okay, sure. And then I trained for a marathon with her, and running, you know, came into my life first. And again, in another moment, that was a terrible year for me, but I ran a marathon.
Uh-huh.
And that helped with my depression very, very much. And that the effects of becoming a runner have never subsided. I mean, depression ebbs and flows. It's still there, but being an athlete in general gave me the benefits to my depression that's never gone away.
How do you feel triathlon is different from running in that regard or overall?
I think running was more of a lifestyle change for me versus triathlon as a sport. I did do races running, but I never was really into speed work. Like it was really, I liked running. Triathlon, I want to get the podium. I want to challenge myself. I want to get faster. I want to go longer. Like that's awakened this like competitive and goal oriented part of me that I didn't really ever have in running, where I want to progress. Like I want to be always improving and getting better. I think starting with a marathon probably made it hard to,
No kidding.
Where do you go from there? And yet you end up at an Ironman so far.
Yeah, I guess I'm doing the same.
Crazy Ironman.
So you can say that, that you're, so the running pretty much, you know, helps you to more of a, to address your depression issues. And then you have a triathlon, which somehow has allowed you to break that bond between with this abusive relationship in the past. But then you have this thing that, you know, every person that we interview, obviously I love to see their Instagram accounts, because normally they speak a lot about the person. And I think so far there have been two people whose Instagram accounts have a very specific thing that stands out from the traditional triathlete account, no? And once we had this person who does some sort of a circus, it's like acrobatics or something like that, and you always see her boat just like hanging from the roof on this, it's very specific, right? On your case, I've seen that I think 90% or more of those poses are about these specific yoga poses. So, and then of course you say that you are a yoga instructor. How does yoga has fit into all of this, no? And did it start much before? Or was it also something that you took at the same time that you started taking triathlon? So how did that get into your life? How has it affected maybe in a good way yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. Also, I want to figure out who that other person was because she sounds awesome.
her name was Jen Pai.
Awesome. We'll look her up. So I started doing yoga around the same time, a few months after I started running. And I became a yoga teacher the following year. I have a trend of going all into things that I like. But yoga and running, at that point in my life, that was, you know, about a year after the abuse. And I was in a very, very, very dark place in my life. I was suicidal and struggling with an eating disorder and not living at home and very directionless and very hopeless. And I made a lot of changes in my life at that time to try to survive. And one of those things was doing yoga. I have an uncle who is very into meditation. And so I kind of grew up with that influence and had an interest in it. And that's sort of what led me to actually taking a class. But yoga has been one of the great gifts in my life, along with running and triathlon. And it's been, I mean, it happens to be a very good complement to running as far as physically stretching and staying flexible and cross training. It is a really good complement. So that just sort of is another coincidence. But really, I do
like mentally and emotionally too, maybe, right? Because with the running and triathlon, it's like go, go, go. But with yoga, it's like a more calm sort of thing, which sort of balances that.
Yes, for sure. That's so true. And that's more, you know, I do, my primary reason for my yoga practice is for the meditation and the mental benefits of it. And the for sure, I'm somebody who benefits greatly from slowing down. It's very counterintuitive to me. And I love whenever people tell me like, oh, I can't meditate. I don't like it. It's boring. I'm like, that's same, but that's why we need it. But yeah, I mean, the harder it is, they say in yoga, the more you need it. And that's something that's been, I think, very true for me. Across the board. Very true. I think it's a good kind of baseline for me. Now that I'm doing more long distance triathlons, yoga doesn't fit into my life nearly as much as it used to, because just time-wise, I spend a lot of time on my bike now. But it is a good way for me to kind of judge, like, when my anxiety is really bad or when I'm struggling, I don't want to do yoga, and I know I need to. So it's something that I'm glad. It's a good way for me to kind of measure, like, where are we at? How are we doing? Based on just how much I want to do it.
So your resistance is kind of a barometer there.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious. So when you can't do the sport for, let's say, because of an injury or something like that, how do you deal?
I have not gotten injured since I started triathlon. Okay. I have been injured as a runner. I don't like it.
No one does.
Thankfully, yoga can be adapted to do that no matter really what you're dealing with. There's some way to do it. If nothing else, you can breathe, and that's yoga. So I did, when I've been injured as a runner, I've gone more into my yoga practice, but it's hard. You know, the momentum has been up since I started triathlon. So when that inevitably happens, it's going to be unfortunate, but it's going to be okay too. I'll do some more yoga.
You'll just breathe.
I'll just breathe.
So talk to us a bit about how you came to enter this Ironman.
So one of the friends of mine on the Farm Sanctuary team in New York, if you ask him to tell this story, he'll tell it very differently, but he's not here. So I'll say,
so we get your version.
He peer pressured me very much. He told me that him and all his friends entered the lottery for this race and they all got in, but the lottery is closed. Sorry. And then I was so jealous because he made it sound so cool and exclusive. And then they opened up some more slots because some people had dropped out. And my friend told me, oh, there's more slots. You should enter. And that was the peer pressure. So I entered it and I told myself, like, I don't really have a lot of vacation days and it's a really far trip. And how am I going to do a full Ironman, especially an extreme one, you know? But I wanted to do it. I was like, I'm never going to do it if I don't know somebody who's doing it. And he's doing it this year. So it's this year or never.
Why not?
But I applied. I kind of, in my head, I was like, if it's supposed to happen, it will. So the application had kind of a section for, you know, describe, like, why do you want to do this? And I really left it blank. Like, I said the bare minimum that I could. I didn't want to, like, sound enthusiastic because I wanted it to be, like, fake. And they responded with, like, within 10 minutes being like, you sound so excited, you're in.
Wow.
And then I trained and then nothing went wrong and it happened and I can't believe it still.
So what was your race experience like?
Oh my gosh. By nothing went wrong, I mean, it's a self-supported race. So you have to bring a support person to bring you your fluids and, you know, have spare tubes, and they get to run the last 8 miles with you. And my boyfriend was my support person. And the night before the race, he got food poisoning and was vomiting for 5 hours. Neither one of us slept. It was bad. And then this is TMI, but I'm sharing it because it's part of my race experience, that I got my period the day before the race. So we were just screwed. My boyfriend said we were doing the race on hard mode. So that was the lead up. We were feeling pretty doomed. I got chased by wild dogs on my bike on a training ride the day before.
Whoa.
It's almost the universe is telling you, don't do this thing. Just pull out. It's time to pull out.
But for some reason, we still did it. And we got really lucky with the water. It was warmer than we expected, which was good because I had not tried the neoprene gloves that I bought last minute and they were way too big. So I had to take them off right away. Thankfully, it was warm enough that didn't destroy my swim. And then it was harder than they even made it sound, which was insane already. There was 20 miles on the bike that were straight uphill. Like, there was not a downhill, but there were false downhills and you were like hallucinating. You were like, I need this downhill. Thank God. We've been going uphill for 10 miles and it just wasn't a downhill at all. And then the run, the first 4 miles of the run, they intentionally made just absolutely brutal so that you'd think that you can't finish. And I gave myself a speech. I was like, you did great. You did the bike. And that was the part you were the most afraid for. You made it this far. It's okay that you're not going to finish. Like, I didn't think I was going to do it. And then somehow I did it.
You gave yourself permission to fail and then you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
What got you past that point where you were just like, ah, that's it. I'm not going to be able to do this.
I did. Like, I think that I was trying to stay positive about it and not just totally give up. And I think that in itself was helpful. And I was, you know, I was really grateful. It was hard to be so down when, I mean, the surroundings were breathtakingly beautiful. And I'm so lucky to have even gone there, like, for a triathlon or just to be there. And I just told myself, you keep running until they tell you you can't, and you get as far as you can. And within that, I really, like, I remembered, I was like, I want this so bad. I've worked so hard for it. Like, just keep going. And then I did. And then we made it. I mean, just happened. I still don't really know how it happened.
Well, that was awesome.
It was very cool.
Did you have any jellyfish in the water?
No, actually, the water was pretty, the challenge of the water was that it was going to be cold. So it really was, it was honestly, besides Lake Placid, it was my favorite swim I've ever done.
Nice.
Wow. So by not very cold, what do you mean by that?
I don't know. It was certainly still a colder swim. I had bought a thermal wetsuit, so that probably helped a lot. They were saying it was going to be 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ooh.
Yeah, it wasn't that, whatever it was. I think it was probably closer to 60.
Yeah, because when I hear the word Patagon, it just brings me images of ice.
Yeah,
snow, right? Mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. There were snowy mountains in the background.
Do you plan on doing another extreme anytime soon? Or you want to stick with the normal?
You know, I told myself going into it that I wouldn't even do another full for a while, and it's been 7 days, and I'm looking at Alaska, man. I'm looking at Iceland.
Classic.
So amnesia has already set in, is what you're saying.
It's very quick.
We've actually talked to a few. We've had a couple other guests on the show. Just I think our previous episode was with a gal who wants to do Alaska Man as well. She's from Australia. Mm-hmm. And Chris from New York itself. He also
Chris
just
from New York.
Gone man, and he's now going for Norseman too.
Oh, awesome.
Catch up, I guess. Both stay in New York.
Yeah.
You guys can, you know, train together breaking ice in the Hudson River or whatever. Crazy thing you do.
Oh my God. I still don't really believe I'm one of those crazy people. Like,
well, clearly you are.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Another thing I wanted to talk about was your website, which I think you started a few years ago. So, you know, you've been sharing your experience over the last few years. I just want to know how that, you know, writing and sharing experiences helped you, and like how long did it take to actually reach that point that you were able to start sharing openly?
Writing has been an extremely healing thing for me, and it's also been a great way for me to connect with other survivors of rape and abuse. And I actually sort of went backwards. I had decided once I realized that what had happened to me was rape, I shared a post on Facebook about it because I realized that I had learned a lot in my journey that I thought I should have known sooner about kind of consent and things like that. So I had shared a post on Facebook initially, and that's sort of how my writing and my sharing started. So it kind of happened at the same time as my whole journey did, if that makes sense. But I initially started my website because when I decided that I was going to report to the police, I had looked up resources online because I had a lot of questions about like what that would be like, just logistically. I wanted to know what I was getting into. And I found some resources, but mostly it was like general information of people being like, here's why I reported and here's why I feel good about it, or here's why I don't feel good about it in hindsight. But I like to know things, and I wanted somebody to tell me like what happens like when you report, like what's step one, what's step two. So when I made the decision to report, I recorded notes along the way of like how I was feeling and what was actually happening. And that was initially why I made my website, was to be another resource for people who want to know that when they're thinking about reporting, like what is it actually like? And then from there, I just continued to share, you know, different feelings I've had, different lessons I've learned, just sometimes on bad days. And I'm very, very proud of what I have there. I think it's, you know, I've had people reach out to me saying that it's helped them, and it's helped me to be able to be open and to kind of get rid of the stigma. There's a lot of stuff people don't talk about. It's uncomfortable, but it's, you know, it's something that the more you talk, like, knowledge is power. That's kind of my belief.
How has the Me Too movement in kind of this last year, has that affected you at all? Has that brought any feelings or changes to feelings?
Yeah, honestly, when Me Too started, it was really triggering. It was kind of difficult. When Me Too became a thing, I had already reported and already been told nothing was going to happen. So it was sort of just my whole Facebook feed was just filled with people's stories, which is really excellent, but it was hard. Then as a result of that, I also got to see, you know, I got to see justice brought in a very different way, where when the justice system doesn't do what it's meant to do, people, you know, just come out and they out their abusers. And you know, I'm somebody who believes that the justice system should be doing a better job. And I think that we should be working towards changing that so that it's more effective. And I'm doing what I can for that. But I have also, I think Me Too is a really good thing that at least socially, if we start understanding and derailing rape culture and victim blaming things, at least like we're the jury in the legal system. So if the jury understands and that change, well, it might not directly impact the laws, impacts our views. And I think anything that's happening socially, it gives us more power and it gives the justice system and prosecutors who are making these decisions about whether or not a case has a chance of going anywhere more confidence that it will, because the jury is more educated.
Well, and that's a great point. I've never heard it phrased that way. And we're not only the jury, we're the, you know, teachers of young children or counselors or people in a church or whoever somebody might, you know, report to or talk to or somebody's friend or that's a great way to think about it.
I also saw that you are a member of the, is it RAINN, RAINN speakers? So what exactly is that?
So RAINN is an organization that does a lot of advocacy work for changing the laws, the sexual abuse and rape laws, and they also provide services to survivors. Like they have the biggest hotline that survivors can call to get help and advice. They have Speakers Bureau, which is essentially any survivor can apply for it. And it's a database of survivors who are willing to speak publicly about their story. So if somebody, some organization or a school or anything, if they're looking for a speaker for an event they're having, RAINN has this database of survivors who are willing to speak. And so organizations or whoever, what have you, can contact RAINN and explain what they're looking for, what sort of experience they're looking for, and what kind of abuse and location. And RAINN will reach out to the members of the speak fit that description and offer them the speaking gig. It's all volunteer, but it's nice. I just joined it recently, so I haven't had any opportunities yet to actually speak, but I'm very a part of it. The work RAINN does is very effective and very exciting that they're there.
Awesome.
Do you feel like the kind of bravery that it takes to do a triathlon has influenced your ability to do things like that as well? Or are they just not connected?
They're connected. I'm not sure if it's exactly in that way, though. It's more that there's a lot, like I said, I really did have a fear of the water and the ocean. And it's sort of like going through everything I've gone through and speaking about it has made me realize that I am capable of doing things that I'm afraid of. And that it's, I think, a really empowering and good thing to face your fears and go outside of your comfort zone. And in a way, like everything I've gone through has kind of taught me that it's like, if you want to do something and you're scared, it's do it.
Well, that sounds like a great motto.
And that's how I ended up patting on.
I was going to say, that's how you ended up there. That's great.
So what do you sort of have your sights on next, on doing or achieving?
Any other fears
you want to, you know, go at head on?
Well, my dream race is the marathon on Antarctica. I want to go to Kona. And I don't know. I think that right now I'm young and I'm already at a... So I think that it's safe to say I'm not there yet, but a year ago I was nowhere near where I am now as far as the ultra marathons. I can't imagine doing it yet, but I can imagine doing it much more than I once could. So I think that in the next 2 years it's gonna happen.
You're inching towards it.
And what's the message you want people listening to take away from your story?
I want people to realize that there's so much in the world to do, and that whatever it is you're facing, whether it's an abusive relationship or mental health, whatever it is that causes you to doubt yourself, it's life is much bigger than those things, and it's much more exciting and joyful to face the fears and let go of the doubts and just kind of take the leap for the things that you don't even know if you can do, because your world just gets bigger and bigger and bigger the more you try. And even though it's hard, no matter what you're facing, there's more out there for you than your struggles.
Love that.
Yeah.
Okay. And are there any people or brands that you like to give a shout out to who have helped you along your journey?
So many. Definitely want to give a big shout out to Farm Sanctuary for making their triathlon team at the most miraculous moment. Shout out to Nathan Semmel for making that happen as well. Andy Wetzel for making me do Patagon Man. Mark Wood for being a great training partner. Darius Brophy for making me a runner. My boyfriend, Ryan Brock. And that's the short list.
Okay. And before we ask our last question, tell everyone where they can find you online.
You can find me online on Instagram at Ashley C. Zach, C-Z-A-C. My website is setthestoryfree.wordpress.com. You can find me on Facebook, Ashley Zaccaro, and I'm happy to talk to anyone ever. And that's my handles. Those are my social medias.
All right. And our last question is, why do you try?
I try because I want to see how much more I can do. And I want to keep pushing those limits and keep living instead of smaller.
Awesome.
It is awesome.
Thank you, Ashley, for coming on the show. It's obviously not an easy topic to talk about, so thank you for sharing so openly with us and our listeners.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me and for letting me share my story.
All right, then. We will catch you sometime later. And
yes, and definitely follow all your adventures.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much, Ashley.
Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Bye.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. Sorry about the poor audio quality in this episode. We actually had some issues with recording it, but I think Ashley was a great guest with an amazing journey, and she spoke about an important topic. So we hope you still enjoyed the show. Also, wanted to let you all know that there won't be an episode next week as we're taking, you could call it a Christmas break, which could maybe give you all an opportunity to catch up on some previous episodes that you've missed. There are some fantastic stories, so do check them out. And we'll either be back with new episodes from next to next week or the first Monday of the new year. And we'll probably consider this episode the last one of season one. So in the new year, we could begin like season two of the Hot Podcast, and it's going to be the same kind of format. But since it's the new year, we thought we could just start a new season. And to help us make the new season better, we would really love to hear your thoughts on the show so far. We've been doing it for like 8 months now, which is pretty crazy. We've had 30 guests on so far. So it would mean a lot to us if you could head on over to humansoftriathlon.com/podcast survey. The link will be in the show notes as well. And it's just a short multiple choice survey that if you could all fill out, it would mean so much to us. You can fill it out as much or as little as you want. It's all going to be completely anonymous. It shouldn't take you more than 5 or 10 minutes, but it'll really give us some valuable feedback to improve the show for next year. So please do visit humansoftriathlon.com/podcast survey and let us know your thoughts. All right, everyone, we wish you all a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, and make sure to join us again for next season, season two, where we'll continue bringing you amazing guests and stories from this Audrey but extra Audrey world of triathlon. Until then, everyone, keep trying.